Through the Gates of the Silver Key by H.P. Lovecraft with E. Hoffman Price. Narrated by Peter Coates. Chapter 1. In a vast room hung with strangely figured arras and carpeted with Bokhara rugs of impressive age and workmanship, four men were sitting around a document-strewn table. From the far corners, where odd tripods of wrought iron were now and then replenished by an incredibly aged negro in sombre livery, came the hypnotic fumes of olibanum, while in a deep niche on one side there ticked a curious coffin-shaped clock whose dial bore baffling hieroglyphics and whose four hands did not move in consonance with any time system known on this planet. It was a singular and disturbing room, but well fitted to the business now at hand. For here, in the New Orleans home of this continent's greatest mystic, mathematician, and orientalist, there was being settled at last the estate of a scarcely less great mystic, scholar, author, and dreamer who had vanished from the face of the earth 4 years before. Randolph Carter, who had all his life sought to escape from the tedium and limitations of waking reality in the beckoning vistas of dreams and fabled avenues of other dimensions, disappeared from the sight of man on the 7th of October, 1928, at the age of 54. His career had been a strange and lonely one, and there were those who inferred from his curious novels many episodes more bizarre than any in his recorded history. His association with Harley Warren, the South Carolina mystic whose studies in the primal Narkal language of the Himalayan priests has led to such outrageous conclusions, had been close. Indeed, it was he who, one mist-mad, terrible night in an ancient graveyard, had seen Warren descend into a dank and nitrous vault never to emerge. Carter lived in Boston, but it was from the wild, haunted hills behind hoary and witch-accursed Arkham that all his forebears had come, and it was amid those ancient, cryptically brooding hills that he had ultimately vanished. His old servant, Parks, who died early in 1930, had spoken of the strangely aromatic and hideously carven box he had found in the attic, and of the undecipherable parchments and queerly figured silver key which that box had contained, matters of which Carter had also written to others. Carter, he said, had told him that this key had come down from his ancestors, and that it would help him to unlock the gate to his lost boyhood, and to strange dimensions and fantastic realms which he had hitherto visited only in vague, brief, and elusive dreams. Then, one day, Carter took the box and its contents and rode away in his car, never to return. Later on, people found the car at the side of an old grass-grown road in the hills behind crumbling Arkham, the hills where Carter's forebears had once dwelt, and where the ruined cellar of the great Carter homestead still gaped to the sky. It was in a grove of tall elms nearby that another of the Carters had mysteriously vanished in 1781, and not far away was the half-rotted cottage where Goody Fowler the witch had brewed her ominous potion still earlier. The region had been settled in 1692 by fugitives from the witchcraft trials in Salem, and even now it bore a name for the vaguely ominous thing scarcely to be envisaged. Edmund Carter had fled from the shadow of Gallows Hill just in time, and the tales of his sorceries were many. Now, it seemed, his lone descendant had gone somewhere to join him. In the car they found the hideously carved box of fragrant wood, and the parchment which no man could read. The silver key was gone, presumably with Carter. Further than that, there was no certain clue. Detectives from Boston said that the fallen timbers of the old Carter place seemed oddly disturbed, and somebody found a handkerchief on the rock-ridged, sinisterly wooded slope behind the ruins near the dreaded cave called the Snake Den. It was then that the country legends about the Snake Den gained a new vitality. Farmers whispered of the blasphemous uses to which old Edmund Carter the wizard had put that horrible grotto, and added later tales about the fondness which Randolph Carter himself had had for it when a boy. In Carter's boyhood, the venerable gambrel-roofed homestead was still standing and tenanted by his great-uncle Christopher. He had visited there often, and had talked singularly about the Snake Den. People remembered what he had said about a deep